Welcome back to Lean and Mean, presented by Comfort Dental and Dr. Rick Kushner. Hi, Dr. Kushner. How are you doing today?
Good. Let's go back to a little more on expenses.
Let's do it.
Taken out individually, or what we refer to as off-the-bottom expenses. Let that soak in. These things might be automobile expenses that are related to business now, continuing ed, dues that can't be equalized, certain clubs, CE, that type of thing, practice promotion of a more personal nature, taking someone to the club to play golf or whatever, even if they're legitimate business expenses, it might not be fair to take those off the top. Let common sense prevail. If it's not fair to take an expense off the top, then don't. Take it off the bottom. For example, let's say I like to take, this is a good one. I like to take my continuing ed with travel. Maybe I'll go to Hawaii or Florida. I'll spend several thousand dollars to take a course in an exotic location. Even the IRS agrees that that expense is a legitimate business deduction. But my partner waits for the local dental society to bring a speaker so he can pay $25 and get his continuing ed hours. His $25 is just as legitimate, but it's not fair to take my big expense, or both expenses for that matter, off the top. Off the bottom means it's deducted from the individual doctor's draw and still run back through the partnership.
Can you be a little bit more specific about that? What exactly does it mean to take it off the bottom and still run it back through the partnership? And what impact does it have on the business?
Yeah, and I compliment you on making me go a little deeper into this. This is really, really important. As a layperson, I'll say it like the IRS thinks the average dental practice overhead is, I don't know, 65, 70, 75. I happen to believe it's closer to 80, 85%. But anyway, ours is in the low 40s. In our practice ledger, we run those individual expenses back through the partnership and deduct them from the individual doctor's draw. Let's say my personal draw, my percentage of the doctor's salary pool, turned out to be $20,000 for a particular month. But during that month, I spent $5,000 on more personal type business expenses, and I kept all the receipts, and I paid for them out of my pocket with personal charge cards or cash. But I kept the receipts from those, and I tallied them up, and I categorized them. This much was auto expense, this much was practice promotion, this much was continuing ed. And I list those items in the practice ledger under the appropriate columns. And my draw check of $20,000 after I deduct the $5,000 more of more personal spend expenses ends up looking like $15,000. So at the end of the year, when we file partnership tax return, we add up all the 15,000s, not the 20,000s, if you're following me. This is the kind of stuff that makes or breaks you. These are legitimate business expenses, but unfair to take off the top because it's unfair to both partners equally. So we take them off the bottom or out of our individual doctor's salary pool, but still run them back through the practice to, in effect, clean them up.
That totally clears it up. Thank you for that.
A little different angle here. You might be wondering, and it refers back to NERD, the philosophical question makes me crazy, but from the selling doctor's standpoint, who sometimes thinks he's, you know, God's gift to dental patients, will my patients accept my new partner checking them at recall? Yes, I said that. It's a problem. And if it's true, maybe they shouldn't be going through this process. Again, from the selling doctor's standpoint, will my patients accept my new partner checking them at recall. Remember the basic format? We're selling equal access to the existing recall system. The R in nerd, we're going to check each other's patients at continuing care recall. We're not going to logistically attempt to schedule the appropriate doctor with the appropriate patient as easily as we could during the initial treatment plan. They go back into the recall pool after the initial treatment plan.
I see.
We prefer they get to meet all of us anyway and develop ties with the practice more so than with an individual doctor. Same thing with staff members. If you don't think your patients will accept your new partner, you're probably right.
How does that typically work right off the bat?
A great junior partner generally dives right in. It's his or her turn to check recall. It's his or her shift. He goes over and sees one of the senior selling doc's patients to check the continuing care, the recall visit, and says something like, "Hi, I'm Dr. So-and-so. Dr. A's taken a well-deserved morning off. I've reviewed the record. I can see what the two of you have been up to the past couple of years. Do you mind if I take a peek?"
And how is this typically received? Are they aware beforehand they may be seeing someone else?
Maybe. We've never formally made a big deal about announcing a new partner. But I think you might probably use a formal announcement to your existing patients. We learned over these years and decades that it never really made much difference. Our patients have become accustomed to our growth. They become accustomed to seeing a new face if it's handled properly, as a routine, as the way we do things. We've really found that nearly all of our patients will accept the new partner. If the patient understands this and makes a request, of course, we'll try to honor it. Oh, no, I want to see Dr. A. I've been seeing her for 6 years. Okay, fine. She'll be on duty for that. Bah, bah, bah. As a buying partner, let's look at the other side of the coin. Don't think you're going to walk into this new practice and completely update and revamp. This is important. This happens both ways. The selling doctor's outdated clinical thinking overnight, or even in a several-month period or a year period. It's not going to happen.
Not going to happen. Or be well-received, sounds like. What else can we cover?
We can talk about doc partner salary distribution from hygiene, for example. It has to go somewhere. Example, divide mentally for me, please, a new patient on his or her initial perio go-around, and then contrast that with a recall patient. Example, I'm repeating. Divide mentally for me, please, a new patient on his or her initial perio go-around in the initial new patient treatment plan. Divide that with a recall patient. Our rule of thumb then is that the doctor who did the exam in our system gets credit for the hygiene production, and then we can relate to both the new patient in the initial perio go-around and the recall patient. Dr. A sees a new patient, diagnoses, however we classify it and call it and name it these days, diagnoses a three-visit non-surgical periotherapy program. Patient accepts treatment, makes financial arrangements, gains the financial commitment, scheduled three times for the non-surgical periotherapy. Treatment happens to start in the hygiene department on Dr. B's recall day or hygiene day. Well, Dr. B may poke his head in to supervise or say hello or how's it going, or maybe even support the hygienist with anesthetic or whatever might be necessary. Dr. B does not do the examination. And our rule of thumb is the examination Dr. A did that last week, Dr. A gets credit for all that production.
Mm.
We do tons of non-surgical perio in every Comfort Dental, and that situation is extremely important. So for all three of those visits, it goes back to Dr. A. That's our rule of thumb. Patient returns. Now, let's follow that patient. Patient returns for follow-up 3 months, maybe 6 months, but probably three in that clinical situation for continuing care. By coincidence, she shows up again on Dr. B's schedule. This time, an examination, a continuing care exam is necessary, and Dr. B goes over and does it. This time, Dr. B gets credit for that production in the exam. Of course, whoever does the exam gets credit for hygiene production. It all goes somewhere.
So A gets the initial, B gets the second, even though B did both?
Yes, you said it correctly. B really didn't do the first visit. He did the exam on the second visit, but yes. Another situation that I think is worthy of significant comment, we have made in our rules, if you will, the hygiene or recall chair, the continuing care, fair game to all partners. I did say this before. I said it quickly. Let's say it's Dr. B. After he diagnoses the need for a DO composite, and let's say that Dr. B has time to do it that particular day right then, he's made the patient understand the need, there's a financial commitment, he might make a comment like, I realize you've worked up to this point primarily with Dr. A, but she's taking a well-deserved morning off. Would you mind if I took care of that for you? I have some time right now.
We learned a lot about the nerd concept from our last episode. So where do we go from here?
Thank you, Judy. We're shifting gears just a little bit here for a few moments. Leadership is something we've always been concerned about and who exhibits the most and that type of thing. I don't know if the senior doctor or selling doctor has to be constantly saddled with the boss role. It kind of comes with the territory, but we share these duties. Personnel, doctor scheduling, staff scheduling. In our situation, for the most part, the doctors schedule the doctors and the staff members ultimately, as they gain experience, schedule themselves. We've done our own payroll ourselves. I'm talking doctor partners now. For years. Accounts payable. Marketing. To be fair, marketing is handled at the corporate level at the big Comfort Dental Monster these days. But again, for decades, individual offices handled it themselves. We don't pay accountants to do many of those bookkeeping chores. In the 2-3-4 doctor model, we've got some doctors that work basically a 24-hour maximum clinical schedule. They have some time to do these management duties, like accounts payable. I like my partners to be involved in these type of things.
Any other obstacles or call-outs in the process?
Disagreements. Hey, we all got to agree. You'll see when we discuss the contracts here shortly, it's really dull, that all must agree on major decisions. Arbitration is provided for if we cannot agree. Alternative delivery systems. I'm referring to, capitation, what we used to call capitation programs, PPOs, Medicaid, anything that involves a lesser or non-fee-for-service payment. Allocation, then, of non-fee-for-service payments. It assumes over the long term, each partner treats approximately the same number of non-for-service patients. By the way, the contract plainly states that each partner has equal access to all types of patients, all types of delivery systems. In other words, there's no skimming the cream and dumping the junk on your partner. Wow, would a dentist do that? You better believe it.
Oh, no.
This assumes over the long term that each of the partners treats approximately the same number of non-fee-for-service patients. That CAP program, if applicable, and we simply divide the CAP check, it goes into the pool in the same percentage as the collection percentages which are derived from the fee-for-service patients. That should make sense.
With fairness comes agreements, or at least should, and we know where we stand on fairness.
I'd like you to understand my beliefs. You're correct. With respect to contracts, I understand that they're extremely critical for many of you. And I agree we got to have them. And we got to have them in order. With the right individuals, I think this is a quote from me. With the right individuals, you don't even need anything written down in contracts. And with the wrong individuals, you can't write enough down. They're very important. They're clarifying, but ultimately, they become guidelines with the wrong people.
Got it. Understood.
So let's look at the purchase agreement and the trial period agreement. Page one of this agreement is made and entered on this date, this month, this year, between Dr. C and the partnership. Partnership refers to Drs. A and Drs. B, recitals partnership, presently practice in this city and state at this address. Dr. C is a dentist living in another area. The partnership desires to hire Dr. C, and Dr. C is willing to be paid by the partnership as an associate on a so-many-month trial basis. It's agreed that if, at the expiration of this many months, it is mutually beneficial, Dr. C and the partnership, Dr. C will be given an opportunity to be an equal partner with the other members of the partnership. They've agreed to the terms and conditions, and they wish to reduce to writing their agreement, and this is it. Effective as of the first day of that trial period, the date the partner hereby hires Dr. C as a dentist, and from that period through the final day of the trial period, Dr. C will be hired as an associate or shall be an associate of the partnership.
So you're saying it's Dr. A and B, and then it's C. And once C is in, how does that work?
Here we go. Partnership shall pay Dr. C in the same way the other members of the partnership are paid as set forth in the Articles of Partnership. Ultimately, the trial period purchase agreement is very brief, and it refers, as you see here, to the Articles of Partnership, which is not so brief. Mm. I need to point out, if this is your first partnership and you're doing and you're going to refer to the Articles of Partnership, they don't exist yet. If you're going to refer to it in your trial period agreement, you better make sure that it exists. And it can exist and be notarized, even though it's not yet in effect. And you can legally refer to it if this is your first partner.
I'm with you.
Thank you. Stick with me through this dry stuff. Next, the Articles of Partnership are presently in effect and have been since such and such date, copies attached. Next, during this many-month trial period, Dr. C will be given the opportunity to practice dentistry under the same terms and conditions as the other members of the partnership. For example, we didn't touch on this very much. For example, Dr. C shall be provided support staff adequate so as not to hinder his or her production. That's another trick that's been played, oh, by the way. Dr. C shall be provided a minimum of 1/3 of all new patients who do not specifically request a particular dentist. Partnership will take appropriate steps as discussed so as not to encourage a patient to request a particular dentist. We did discuss that, and I even said I might walk up front and say, give them all to her. I'll be fine.
The patient can see any dentist, you're saying. And back to Dr. C. Are they now one of these dentists?
Dr. C, again, shall practice dentistry and management of the practice in adherence to the existing policies of the partnership. Now, there's control of senior partner and office policies, sure. There it is in writing. It seems natural. We try to minimize it, but there it is. Whose policies are the existing policies of the partnership? Dr. A. There's control that Dr. A is so fearful of losing. Dr. C, to continue, shall share management, marketing, and promotional responsibilities equally with other members of the partnership. Dr. C shall be provided exclusive use of the office, a minimum of 1/3 the available working hours in a given month.
Fairness is being emphasized again and always. Number three.
This so-many-month trial period beginning and ending the first and last date of the trial period is a trial period to see whether Dr. C shall be given an opportunity to become an equal partner with the other members of the partnership. Dr. C shall no later than one day prior to, or at least the very latest the day the trial period starts, pay the partnership X dollars as a deposit toward Dr. C's buy-in. The entire buy-in price shall be the same X dollars on the final date of the trial period. If the buy-in is not consummated, then in such event, the partnership shall return the X dollars to Dr. C. It's important that you understand that last clause. We've talked about it several times. If the buy-in's not consummated, the transaction shall be the equivalent of an interest-free loan. Partnership is required to give the deposit back.
I see.
What they had up to that point was an interest-free loan. We've talked about this. We'll give him or her the money back, but we'll keep the interest. And that about covers it. That's everything. We're strict with our financial commitment. We also don't want someone forced to stay for any reason. Maybe you think it's too lenient. If so, change it. I do not. If at any time or for any reason during the trial period, Dr. C decides that he does not desire to become a member of the partnership, he must notify the partnership in writing. In such event, we'll give the partners 3 weeks to return the X dollar deposit to Dr. C. In such event, the partnership's employment of Dr. C would terminate upon notification, but Dr. C would continue to be paid for his previously performed services in the same manner he was paid during his employment until all monies are collected by the partnership or something else is agreed upon. You've got X dollars in accounts receivable. We're willing to give you X minus Y to go away now and we won't bother you with paychecks anymore.
And how's the timing look on this?
Judy, it might be 3-4 months. The guy's gone. He's still, based on his accounts receivable, receiving his percentage of the doctor's salary pool. In such an event, Dr. C would have no restrictions whatsoever placed on his future professional activities. Dr. C would be free to contact at his or her expense any or all patients he or she treated while he or she was employed by the partnership. I know how sellers hate this clause. If you can negotiate it out, fine. But if I'm the buyer, it's not going. It's staying. This is a major point in the buyer's favor. You might ask me, what's number four? Well, here it comes. Number four, Judy, is the flip side. Partnerships can do the same thing if they don't like Dr. C. And again, on to five. If on a date approximately a month or so prior to the end of the trial period, partnership desires for Dr. C to become a partner, he'll notify Dr. C of its decision on that date. If on that same date, Dr. C desires to become a partner, he'll notify. If both events occur, then the X dollars deposit becomes, once again, the entire buy-in price on the final date of the trial period, and the buy-in shall be consummated. In such an event, the articles of partnership, buy and sell agreement will be adapted to accommodate Dr. C. To avoid confusion, a decision involving everyone will be made by this date, a month or so, prior to the final date of the trial period. If during the trial period Dr. C either dies or becomes disabled, partnership will return the same X dollars to Dr. C or the heir, we will give him 3 weeks to do so.
Oh, wow.
Let's look at the articles of partnership. The initial contributions of the partner shall be set forth in Schedule A. Schedule A is a list of what each partner is contributing. Your accountant will know how to handle Schedule A. Section B, additional capital contributed by partners. Additional capital shall be required by each partner only upon your unanimous agreement of the partners. If the partners agree that additional capital contributions are necessary, they shall be made in equal increments. To refer back, this is not an off-the-top overhead item.
Not overhead. Got it.
In other words, if you need to buy another operatory, we believe this is equal opportunity. Some usually do, some may, but usually they do make better use of their opportunity than others, but it's still equal opportunity. If we make capital improvements, if we buy big things for the practice, the partners contribute equally. Remember, the day-to-day, week-to-week, month-to-month operating expenses, the heavy hitter pays the heavier load.
That's right. We went over the numbers. It's fair.
It is. And that was justified by the bigger share of the doctor's salary pool, the symbiotic relationship. This is a capital contribution. Those are done equally, those big items. After we talk about the checking account, there's a description by the doctor. There's a description of the doctor salary pool distribution. We've kind of done this. I think it's clear. I won't go through it all for you now, but I'll summarize it again by saying the first skinny paragraph is legalese for the doctor's salary distribution system. And the second skinny paragraph is written so that we can all understand it of the same system. And then to continue, all profits and losses accruing from the sale of partnership property shall be allocated. How? Sale of partnership property? Equally.
Sounds good. Let's hear more.
Sure. Depreciation, investment tax credits, those things equally, again, like capital contributions. If we sell capital equipment, equally. Negligence of a partner. All losses resulting from negligence of a partner to the extent the partnership's not reimbursed for such losses by insurance owned by the partnership shall be charged to that partner in full. This is an attempt to overcome the partnership liability problem. If insurance covers the problem, then fine, we'll absorb it. If insurance does not cover the problem, then we're going to try to lay it on that individual. More dry stuff, but good stuff, Judy. Day-to-day operations. New patients who do not specifically request to be treated by one of the partners shall be assigned on an alternate basis to the partners. Above that, it says a patient requests to be treated specifically by one of the partners. That shall be allowed. And if that partner refuses, then the other partner shall have the opportunity. But more comments on number two. It's written here as a safeguard that they'll be assigned on an alternate basis, and it needs to be there. But if you believe, as I believe, that new patients ought to be offered the first available opening, even today if possible, remember that nerd, who will have more first available openings? Who will have more first available? The new partner. And I think that's terrific. I think that's the way it should be. In reality, early on, the new partner really receives the lion's share of new patients, even though we have this clause alternating to fall back on. Now let me break it down this way. Number one up there refers to any scheduling requirements that you may have, maybe restricting the number of Saturdays or evenings. You know, you can put that stuff in here. Partnerships shall make available adequate support staff, equal opportunity to produce. Three, the business phone should be answered with the partnership name, not with the individual partners' names. That's a clause that, to me, someone with common sense should think, that doesn't need to be in there, but these are dentists we're dealing with. That needs to be in there. There shall be no attempt by employees of the partnership to encourage a patient to request a particular partner. There shall be a concerted effort by the partnership and by the employees of the partnership to place a greater emphasis on the partnership's identity than on the individual partners' identities. I might criticize this clause as a little vague, But I like that it's in there. Again, how do we handle, we just did this, how do we handle non-fee-for-service cap-type fees? We talked about that adequately. It assumes we all see equal numbers of them, equal percentages of them, and we just fall back to the doctor's salary pool percentages on fee-for-service collections. In other words, again, to repeat, there's no dumping the junk. Sorry about using the word, the junk plans on the junior partner, unless there's some agreement to that effect. They're off the top and off the bottom expenses. Partnership shall pay all expenses which are necessary to the operation of a dental practice, including, not limited to, and again, this is a repeat, but salary, supplies, rent, lab fees, equipment maintenance, that should, advertising, marketing, taxes, excuse me, maintenance expenses, journals, malpractice insurance, if it's equalized, those are off the top. We discussed the off the bottom before.
Yes, but I think making that differentiation clear is important, as we've done in the past.
Yes, of course. The partnership shall not pay or reimburse expenses of a personal matter unless deducted from the respective partner's draw. And I'm repeating, but you made a good point. These might include things like auto expense, personal promotion, business travel, entertainment, education expenses, even if it's related and legitimate to the practice of dentistry. We'll deduct those from the individual partner's draw or off the bottom, but still run them through the paperwork of the partnership books.
Thank you, Dr. Kushner. That's all the time we have for today. Join us next episode for more Lean and Mean.